5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome back into the Radcast, everybody. I am Steven.
I am Matt.
Hello, Matt.
And I am stuffed up.
He is stuffed up. So, just a little peek behind the curtain. Yeah. Whenever there's coughing, whenever there's any throat clearing in the microphone, sniffles,
yeah.
I edit all that stuff down or out. So
I'm going to be all edited out of this thing.
So you will not be hearing pretty much any of Matt. No, all that to be said that if you hear, Matt will, of course, go off the mic.
Maybe.
Okay, well.
You know, you better.
Yeah, you better get off the mic. You will turn away if he has to cough. Sometimes some sequences can't be edited smoothly to take out everything.
Right.
So just a bit of a heads up. So
yep, speaking of head, my head hurts.
Well, sorry to hear that.
That's okay.
Seasonal allergies.
Yep.
But we thank all of you for joining us again. Week 3 of Martial Arts Month.
Martial Arts Month.
Yes.
Come on now.
Pardon me. Martial Arts Month. Thank you all for joining us. If you listened last week, you heard us talk about The Next Karate Kid.
Good episode.
Yeah, it was a good episode. It's a movie that we like, and it's a... Yeah,
that's it.
It is what it is.
That we like
two of the main points there. Good
yep.
episode, a movie that we like.
There it is.
This week we are talking about a movie. At least I don't want to put words in your mouth. There soon for you, but at least for me, has become one of my top five favorite action movies.
I loved it.
It is. If you heard us and Showdown in Little Tokyo, we sing the praises of Brandon Lee, and we talked about how we were going to talk about this movie,
yeah,
and we were like, you know, I just know we're gonna love it, or maybe not. I don't know. No. We loved
it.
I loved it.
I'm not surprised. Speaking of talking about this movie, I know last week we mentioned that we were gonna have a guest.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
We decided to save him for another episode.
Yeah. More than likely a six mix.
Man, most definitely.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's just Matt and I again. Yep. Just doing this together. Also, a little tidbit, show notes for next week. We're going to be going out of town on Saturday, coming back Saturday night, but very late Saturday night. Let's say late as in early Sunday morning.
Yes.
So we're not going to be recording next week. So we're going to do a re-release of Three Ninjas High Noon at Mega Mountain.
Three Ninjas High Noon at Mega Mountain.
From Sucktastic Cinema.
Sucktastic Cinema, yeah.
It's one of my favorite of our Sucktastic Cinema riffs.
It's a very, very funny episode.
Very funny episode. Usually our re-releases don't do too well, but we want to still get an episode out
to
all of you.
I understand.
Exactly.
I too get annoyed when podcasts I listen to, I tune in for a new episode, and they just re-release an old episode.
And if
I understand why you do it.
I get it. And it's not to say you all are annoyed, but it is one of those things where we have a listener base where more than likely they heard it the first time. But if it's been a while, I mean, it's been two and a half, three years since we released that one. Mm-hmm. So maybe you'd want to revisit it when we re-release it
for
the Radcast.
Or maybe you didn't check it out the first time because you didn't know about Sucktastic Cinema or you didn't listen to Sucktastic
Cinema. So many things that you can go about doing.
Yep.
Just giving you a heads up for next week. But one thing you can always go about doing is checking out our social media. Where can they find us?
You can find us on Instagram at the Radcast. Cast is spelled with a K. Radcast is all one word. While you're there and in the link in our bio is to our merch page.
You are cast crew. Go hook yourself up with some
the
Radcast
cast
merch.
Crew, as we established week one of Martial Arts Month, we have decided to call you all our cast crew, you know, after 5 years of having this podcast.
Yeah.
So, but better late than never. But you can go check out Jeff Wright Design's Redbubble page. You'll have the link in our bio. And you can get some merchandise.
Yeah.
And then you're listening to us now. So wherever you're listening to us now, it works.
Yep.
And wherever else you can listen to podcasts. And if you so choose, so feel inclined, if you're able to, on that podcast app of choice, rate and review Pretty Please with sugar on top.
Please, pretty please with sugar gravy on top.
5-star reviews only, please.
Yes, only 5 stars. They will not allow anything else other than 5 stars.
True. They emailed us.
They told us that.
Yeah.
Explicitly.
Yeah. Like with many cuss words.
Yes, exactly.
Explicit words.
Yeah, exactly. Here's a movie that had many explicit words.
It did.
And a very brief sex scene.
Yes.
No penetration was seen. So it's just two naked bodies on top
of
one another.
Two naked bodies slapping skin.
Two sexy people making love. They're naked and it's...
Makes me sick.
It's a wonderful thing between two consenting adults.
Yeah.
But we're not going to...
Sex is beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
It is. It totally is. so let's... That's not the whole movie. This isn't an erotica thriller or anything.
No,
it's a badass martial arts action movie with one of the what-ifs in Hollywood that makes me the most sad, and that's the rise of Brandon Lee,
who was... going to be not just a bona fide action star. He already was after movie, but The Crow was going to send him to the A-list.
And
this movie
also
gave you a little taste of him as a leading man.
He was someone who said that he, of course, you know, appreciates his stepping into the mainstream with these action movies. And he was excited about The Crow because it was something different. There's obviously action in The Crow, but it's more artistic. If you want to hear us dote over one of our favorite, not just comic book movies, but one of our favorite movies, you can go listen to our Crow episode with our younger brother, Tyler.
Yep.
But he was excited because he wanted his career trajectory was hopefully sending it into the stratosphere, but he also wanted to be, in his words, like a Mel Gibson. Who Mel Gibson could do Mad Max and do Lethal Weapon, but then turn around and around the time he was doing
Hamlet,
you know, he would do Hamlet and do these more serious roles. And it rapid fire shows he had the chops to do it.
Yeah.
He
obviously maybe some fine tuning here and there.
Of course, yeah.
But was very good.
He was excellent. And he did, what was nice is he didn't have to carry the movie either, because the supporting cast was phenomenal.
Yeah, Powers Booth.
Powers, truly, man, a powerhouse.
Man, what a great character actor.
What a great character actor. Yep. What a great set of characters. And what a nice, as opposed to Showdown in Little Tokyo, which we talked about, was going at a breakneck speed, but going all over the place.
It's got a nice pace to
it. It's a great pacing. It's a great, tight action movie that has a cohesive story that you can follow
for the most part.
For the most part.
This movie, like our other entries into this month, there are some things that you sit there as an audience member and be like, I could use a bit more explanation here, or a bit more explanation here.
Yeah.
But it's way more cohesive than our previous two offerings.
Yeah, exactly. And you had said it's a nice, tight action movie, 96 minutes. You can find it on Amazon Prime. Unfortunately, it's not streaming anywhere other than you having to rent it on Amazon Prime.
Yep.
But Rapid Fire was released August 21st, 1992. So almost a year before Showdown in Little Tokyo was released. So the Showdown
year before?
I'm saying almost a year before Showdown in Little Tokyo was released, and then Rapid Fire was released. Sorry.
Right.
I didn't, my spacing of those words.
Yeah, yeah.
But August 21st, 1992, directed by Dwight H. Little, who he directed one of our favorite sequels, Halloween 4.
Oh, yeah.
Starring, as we had said, Brandon Lee as Jake Lowe, the great Powers Booth as Mace Ryan, Nick Mancuso as Antonio Serrano, Kate Hodge as Carla Withers, Raymond J. Barry as Agent Stewart, which Raymond J. Barry and Powers Booth would go head-to-head in Sudden Death.
Yeah.
Yeah. Z Ma as Kinman Tommy Tao, with another great character actor, Tony Longo as Bruner Gazi, Tony Longo's Triscuit Mesmer and Angels in the Outfield.
It was surreal to hear him say the F word in this movie, because I've only ever seen him in kids' movies. Remote, Angels in the Outfield, Lloyd.
He was briefly in 16 Candles.
Yeah. So I guess not all kids' movies. But,
I mean, but he was all over the place. He played any manner of characters, mainly big, tough guys.
Yep.
With Tony Longo as Bruner Gazi. He's the main heavy for Antonio Serrano. Henchman. Francois Chow as Officer Ferris, who he played Shredder in The Secret of the Ooze.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Al Leong as Men. We'd mentioned Al Leong before.
Al Leong is in pretty much any 80s, early 90s action movie.
Michael Paul Chan as Carl Chang. Who is this nutball?
Yeah, as soon as I saw him, I was like, that's the guy from Batman and Robin. I was like, who is this nutball?
Dustin Nguyen as Paul Yang. He's in 21 Jump Street. Yeah. He was also in Three Ninjas Kick Back.
It's true. Where's my fish? Where's my fish? Yeah, he's one of the idiots. Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, and again, Gerald Akamura is briefly in here at the end.
Dustin Nguyen is very briefly in this movie.
Yeah, he has a credit. I just wanted to mention him because of 21 Jump Street at the time, and then of Three Ninjas
Kickback. Yeah.
Box office of $14.3 million on a $10 million budget. And what was on the VHS? There was a few more things on the VHS as opposed to Showdown Little Tokyo. Mm-hmm. Sean Connery and Wesley Snipes in the film Rising Sun, which also features Cary Hiroyuki Tagawa and Tia Carrera.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then coming from Fox Video, on April 1993, Sandra Bullock and Tate Donovan are two loser scientists.
Love potion number nine.
Who create a powerful love potion that makes people lust after them just by them talking. Love potion number nine.
Yes.
Now, rapid fire has a standard. Yeah. It has a standard 80s and 90s action movie premise. It's, of course, it's surrounded around the drug trade.
Drug lords, drug cartels.
Drug war. Tommy Tau is the one who's thriving at it in the moment. The character of Tommy Tau and Nick Mancuso's Antonio Serrano comes to visit him at the beginning of the movie in China to say,
you provide me with it and we transport it. I want more of the cut.
Exactly.
Because you'd be nothing without me.
Because essentially Serrano is falling on hard times.
Yeah.
You know, Serrano is going bankrupt, as the Chicago police force puts it. And Antonio Serrano he's the big wig in the Chicago mafia.
Yeah, yeah.
So
long way from the South Side when he gets to China. Yeah.
So what happens, how Jake Lowe, an art student played by Brandon Lee, he finds himself in the crosshairs is because he's at this party.
Yeah, he's at this art gallery. It's held at like an art gallery, but it's like a party.
Pro-Chinese democracy, protest party, which he's against it because he was at the Tiananmen Square massacre.
He's in the Tiananmen Square massacre of 1989. His dad watched his dad, who was an intelligence officer in the army, and who went to... Because the Tiananmen Square, essentially, like a quick rundown, it's also known as the June 4th incident.
Yeah.
There are student-led demonstrations held in Tiananmen Square, Beijing, China. It lasted from April 15th to June 4th, 1989. After weeks of unsuccessful attempts between the demonstrators and the Chinese government to find a peaceful resolution, the Chinese government declared martial law on the night of June 3rd and deployed troops to occupy the square, and was referred to as the Tiananmen Square Massacre. So also, if you've seen the picture of the civilian standing in front of like the four tanks, it's like one of the most famous pictures of all time. That has to do with this as well. Yeah. Essentially, their goal was to end corruption within the Chinese Communist Party, as well as like democratic reforms, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, freedom of association, social equality, democratic input on economic reforms.
Yeah.
And so essentially he was there, him and his dad were there for that. Yeah. And they lived in America, but they just went to visit China for that. And this whole time he's kind of cynical about it. He's like, you know, why stand up for what's right? Like, where it's not going to make a difference,
doesn't do kind anything. Of thing,
which is why he's so opposed. Because we get to the college campus, and Dustin Nguyen is talking about like pro China democracy, like we need to protest that here on college campus, and he's like, Jake, your dad's a martyr. Like, we need you to like join the cause and at least talk about what it was like to be there, because you were there at the massacre.
Yeah, that's one of the character things with Jake Lowe, is he is a jaded, cynical college student who throughout the course of the movie runs into these various characters who pretty much teach them that you got to stand for something.
Yeah.
You can't just go through life saying F this, F that, you know, your causes aren't worth shit. And, you know, and he's, you know, Powers Booth essentially is Mace Ryan, who is almost like an analog for his father.
Yeah.
We see that by him multiple times saying, you remind me of my father. And then Carla, the female officer, is talking about how like Mace reminds Jacob's father. That's why he's so,
he's like, you don't know my father.
Yeah, so like petulant against him. Yeah. And then one of the things I realized is even with these older movies, we're very bad at not seeing spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it's one of those things where it's not a huge deal. Nobody is up in arms about it. They haven't said anything to us. And usually whenever we talk about it, people still go and watch it and enjoy the movies that we talk about for the most part. So I just want to say, I mean, maybe just as a courtesy, I kind of feel bad that we never do it. But spoiler alert, at the end of the movie, Powers Booth has found himself in a situation Jake saves him from. And it's essentially a redemption type thing where instead of when he was at Tiananmen Square watching his father die, his father telling him to go and run. And and
Jake almost has this survivor's remorse. Like, I could have helped. I was like 10 feet away. Yeah. I could have helped.
He pulls this father figure character, quote unquote, that has been established again as an analog for his father out of the fire of Tao's
later.
That's later. We'll get there. Yeah. We'll touch on it. But Jake is shown as just, you know, he's a college student who just wants to get by. And
very charming, charismatic college student.
He rides a motorcycle.
He doesn't have to say.
Because of course he does.
Exactly.
Brandon Lee doesn't have to say anything yet.
And he can just smolder.
He's handsome.
Yeah.
He has a magnetic appeal to him.
Yeah.
Then when he starts talking, he's so good at delivering one-liners and wisecracks and being a wise ass.
Yeah.
But he's also great at that inflection that you have to deliver convincing one-liners and convincing, like, remarks like that. He has it. Like, truly, I know we've kind of hinted at it. He had it all. Mm-hmm. Minus, you know, again, a few maybe, you know, cheesy line deliveries. Here,
like I said, fine-tuning a little bit.
Here and there. It's not consistent. What's consistent is you see how good he was.
Yeah.
And he just oozes with charm and charisma.
Yep.
And he was gonna go places.
I know.
And for a lot of people's accounts, he was a nice guy.
Yeah.
Like, he was smart.
Yeah.
He was a cinephile, so he helped do the choreography, the fight choreography on here.
A lot of inspiration from Jackie Chan movies.
He threw in a lot of ideas from Hong Kong cinema, a lot of homages.
Yeah.
But then also, not Dwight H. Little, Raymond Barre.
Yeah.
Kind of found a kinship with him because Raymond Barre was a theater actor.
Yeah.
And Brandon Lee would talk with him a lot about wanting to do some of like Raymond Barre's shows that he did. And Brandon Lee was part of a theater troupe. Mm-hmm. Like, he was a theater guy. Yeah. And also, if you watch The Crow, that's a very theatrical performance, which is one of the things that makes it great.
Yeah.
He was someone who was diverse. He had a commanding presence when he could, or when he had to be commanding and be convincing, but he also, when he could be funny, when he could be a smart aleck.
Plus, he was a smooth martial artist.
So freaking smooth.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the best things about this movie is, unlike Shodown Little Tokyo, where you see glimmers of it, but it's a lot of brute force behind Dolph Lundgren, who himself is an accomplished martial artist. His choreography is that, again, inspired by Hong Kong cinema. It's so fluid.
Maybe a little from his dad.
Well, of course.
Bruce Lee.
Exactly. Yeah. Jeet Kune Do.
Yeah.
And all that jazz.
Yeah.
But his contribution to the fight choreography, he uses the props around him.
Yeah.
That was one of the things that stuck out to me that was really awesome.
The most fun, like, his one-on-one stuff is cool, but when he's fighting multiple people, that's so much fun.
It's so cool, because not only, again, is he smooth, but he also uses the things around him to be able to take people out or distract them so that he can do the multi-person fights. It's awesome. But just kind of dialing back a little bit, Chang, who we mentioned earlier, the who is this nutball guy, he's kind of the middleman between Tao
and Serrano.
And Serrano essentially finds the demonstration, the little art gallery party or whatever that Jake gets tricked into going to by one of the nude models that he's drawing in his art class. Chang is the benefactor, if you will, of the fundraiser. It's a fundraiser.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a party, it's a fundraiser.
Yeah.
They're trying to make money.
Let's party! Yeah,
Dustin Nguyen's like, come on, man, we need money. Can you talk to them, please? Because he's like, you were there. So he just sees
nothing political, just like, tell us about your experience. Mm-hmm.
So Carl Chang, again, the benefactor, he goes up to, he's told by one of his guys, or we see earlier that Tao is talking to him, and he's in Tao's pocket because he's the one who...
He's like, Serrano's weak.
Yeah, he sees the drug cartel making its way to Chicago, where Serrano is.
Yeah.
So Serrano ends up at Chang's place in Los Angeles, and he's like... Because Tao said something before...
Yeah, it's a Sicilian proverb, don't ask for what you can't take.
Yeah, there was the scene at the beginning where we see... Tao and Serrano talking about, you know, I want this cut and I made you and yada, yada, yada.
And that becomes pretty tense.
Yeah.
But you're in Tao's backyard. Mm-hmm. And so he doesn't feel threatened. And he looks at Serrano and starts speaking Italian.
Yeah.
He gives him a Sicilian proverb. And Tony Long is like, what did he say? He's like, it's a Sicilian proverb. Don't ask for what you can't take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which honestly, I think the movie should have, from the get go, started like scoping over China, where you get the title card, like and then Brandon Lee.
It's literally just Brandon Lee in slow mo, doing martial arts and kicking ass.
They're trying to sell the movie off of his name, which I mean, of course, he recognized they're trying to do that, but also, he had kind of gotten his footing in American cinema already, and you know, making a way for himself. Go back to the fundraiser. Serrano tells Chang, okay, you know, I'm going to put into practice the don't ask for what you can't take, and I'm taking your cut of everything. I'm going to cut out the middleman. Now give me your books. And Chang was like, you know, you don't know, like you're making a big mistake.
Yeah.
And it turns out he was, as it goes on, because Tao, like, Serrano's dangerous, but Tao's the most dangerous out of them.
Yeah.
Serrano kills him. And it's later shown that, like, it must have been a big deal, and he must have really been on, like, hard luck against the wall.
Must really been desperate.
Because
he hasn't pulled the trigger in 15 years.
Exactly.
But Chang flies through the window outside the office, and Jake Lowe just happens to be standing there, and Serrano looks at him, and it's just look Brandon Lee has where he looks at him and he kind of squints, and I kind of attribute that to that character being an artist and wanting to look at his subject or whatever, but also it's just illustrating like he's studying like this person's face, so Serrano's like, kill that kid in the black jacket because he saw my face, you know, and so... Basically, that's the beginning of Jake
Lowe's...
It's
an escape down through the mansion or whatever.
That's the beginning of him getting swept up into this drug war. Mm-hmm.
And it's a whole manner, again, of the standard things to where, like, the FBI get involved, and there's an exchange between him and the LA cops that brought him into the police station. Raymond J. Barry is the FBI agent who comes in. He's like, you know, we'll put you up in witness protection in Chicago.
But they're in Serrano's pocket.
Yeah, exactly. So they're in Serrano's pocket, and we see like he's in an apartment. Well, simultaneously in Chicago, the group that's been trying to hunt down Serrano and then also get Tao, who has a laundry facility in Chicago that he again helps funnel the drugs through. But Powers Booth is the chief detective there.
Yeah. He's not in anyone's pocket.
No.
He cares about ending the drug war. He's been trying to take down Tao for 10 years and anyone associated with him.
Yeah.
So like when they first time we see him, he's like, you know, Serrano, Chang, and Tao, that's who swept up in this, and now Chang is dead. You know, what do you think they're trying to do? And Shredder, the guy that played Shredder, is like, take out the middleman kind of thing.
Exactly.
And so anyone who's in Tao's orbit, he cares about taking down.
And they hear that Jake, the witness of Serrano's, you know, murdering Chang, is in Chicago. So he sends Carla Withers, his intelligence agent, to go find where Jake is. Yeah. And it ends up, while she's going to find him, that's when we start seeing it's a double cross.
Yeah.
And the FBI is in Serrano's pocket, but Jake takes them out. Now, one of the inconsistent things, and one of the things that is the questions that kind of raise up, is how does an art student know how to use a gun so well?
I was literally just about to, because I wanted to backtrack back to the art, him trying to escape after the initial he sees Serrano, and now it's Serrano's goal to kill him, because he's a fucking force.
And he has no hesitation either.
Yeah.
This is, well, it ties into another thing that's not consistent.
It does feel very much like normally in an action movie, I call it like the one man army type mm-hmm. thing, to where one guy dodges gunfire yeah. and basically just starts kicking the shit out of all these people. Mm-hmm. I had to keep reminding myself of like, he's a college art student.
Yeah.
Like it makes sense in some bits of exposition. They say his dad, taught martial arts.
Yeah.
And even, you know, twice a year, what they said at the Langley, which is Langley, Virginia, CIA mm-hmm. headquarters.
Yeah.
So CIA.
His father's military experience yeah. could also help yeah. with that.
So the, nothing, that's the martial not arts said, made sense,
mm-hmm.
but not everyone that learns martial arts has like the spatial awareness yeah. that is conveyed in this movie. Like he just felt very capable.
Right.
You know, it wasn't just like, you know, him hiding for a little bit, doing a couple kicks. Like, he's sliding and kicking tables mm-hmm. and, like, breaking arms and shooting guns.
Yeah.
And so, like, the martial arts makes sense. I also was like, how is he so proficient at, because usually this, it feels like a character who has very high-level military training.
Yeah.
But he's a college art student. It would, and there is yeah. nothing to suggest mm-hmm. that his dad trained yeah. him from a young age.
Because yeah. they do a good job of inserting the exposition to where it needs to go. Like when we see the Los Angeles police officers with the yeah. FBI going to be walking into the interrogation room where Jake is sketching out
yeah.
Serrano. They're saying, you know, yeah, his dad, this, and
Army
this.
Intelligence yeah. attached to Beijing embassy yeah. in 89.
And then there's yeah. multiple scenes to where Jake wants to see his father's file.
Which is also very, isn't explained extensively.
Right.
Like, I put things together mm-hmm. upon second viewing, yeah. but I remember when I was first viewing, I was like, this feels very shoehorned. That
right.
there's, like, his cynicism is rooted in some sort of suspicious... Like, he wants to see his father's files. See, like, was he... I'm only putting this together. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is why he wants to see it, but yeah. he's got this kind of, like, cynicism. He's suspicious that his father was sent.
Mm.
Like, maybe he was trying to find details to see maybe yeah. if his father was sent by the army. Because later, when Carla's talking about the sting operation, mm-hmm. she's like, you know... He's like, I might die. He's like, you know, Ryan wouldn't send a civilian in there
mm-hmm.
unless he was like in total control of the situation. He's like, that's what the military told my dad. Mm. And he came home in a box.
Yeah.
And I think so. Again, I'm just piecing things together.
Yeah, he's suspect of any sort of authority calling up that yeah. maybe has some
so
sort
is
of
he suspicious
stance they're taking.
It's the authority yeah. figures that put his father in that position.
Yeah, when the feds walk in, when he's in the interrogation room in L.A., he's like, great, more cops. And they're like, we're yeah. FBI. And he's like, cops in suits. Mm-hmm. Like, he has this distrust
yeah.
that is sown within him that we're just led, again, to assume that, you know, a lot of that comes from yeah. anybody who has some sort of purpose and they take action on yeah. the purpose and end up dead. He's like, okay, well, yeah. what's the point?
Because later when Carla gets his file, mm-hmm. gets his dad's file, and he's like, it's not all in here. She's like, what are you looking for? He's mm-hmm. like, I don't know, nothing. She's like, Jake, I looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
Your father was there because he was doing the right thing,
mm-hmm.
which leads me to believe that he was suspicious that he was there.
Right.
That someone put him there
yeah.
to maybe be a symbol, to mm-hmm. be a martyr,
yeah.
to sent there to mm-hmm. die.
Yeah.
They never say that.
Yeah. But what
once I'm using context clues.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But you doing that and our listeners who do that with movies, that's something I also want to make clear, because I know we do say a lot, well, they didn't say it or they didn't give exposition. You know, we're not calling for movies to just serve every bit of detail on a
oh,
silver
no.
platter
use
at
your
all.
Brain.
It's actually a very fulfilling thing when you, the audience, start putting
yeah.
things together.
Honestly, as I was piecing that stuff together, I was like, oh,
and also
that would make sense.
And also yeah. it doesn't, it really, at least in this movie's case, because some things are so egregiously glaring that you're like, come on.
Yeah.
In this case, though, it, you know, whether that's a gripe or it's not a gripe, it doesn't take away from your enjoyment of the
no.
movie. So yeah, Jake, another great scene.
The action, apartment fight.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, this
the
also
close quarters action mm-hmm. is really good.
Yeah. yeah. There's no wasted time almost. It doesn't meander because the scenes leading up to the fights are great too, because there's great performances. Powers Booth is a tour de force character actor.
Carla Withers.
Carla Withers.
Is, rest in peace, Carla Withers. I loved you in Rocky.
Yeah, exactly.
Carl Weathers.
Sorry. Yeah. Kate Hodge is great. It really just goes to show that Powers Booth, at least to me as I was watching it, and also like Kate Hodge, again, great Nick Mancuso, who's a very like over the top without being like
all of the bit players are take very him
seriously.
Good.
But yeah, all the bit players are great, but Powers Booth, we sung his praises in Sudden Death.
Yeah.
It's almost like you can give him a mediocre script and his line delivery and his attitude in delivering it and just his total presence makes it seem like it's like Die Hard, like it's a cleverly written script. Now, also, this script was very clever, I think. Yeah. I think a lot of the dialogue was very good.
I will say there was one line delivery that I thought was funny, and it was at one point Frank Stewart, the FBI agent that double crosses, that works for Serrano and double crosses Jake.
Mm-hmm.
At one point they face off, and he's like, he doesn't know who Powers Booth is. He's like, freeze. He's like, no, I'm a cop. You freeze. I was like, no, you freeze. No, you freeze.
No, of course.
Yeah.
But it's also funny that Powers Booth is the gruff Mace Ryan, but he also wants to continue to play by the book because he's the one who's painted as the person between him and Jake who has a righteous cause that he's going for to want to put
Tao away.
Sometimes
you got to take a stand, kid.
Yeah, he's been after Tao for 10 years, and Jake's the one who's suspect of him and like scoffs at his higher cause.
Plus the sacrifice for that cause. Because he's like, let me take a stab in the dark. Mm-hmm. It's like, you have a family? He's like, yeah.
Divorced.
You know, you spend all your time doing this. And then even when you're hanging out with people, you're talking about your job. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like I said, being cynical about it kind of
thing. And being a wise ass.
Yeah. We mentioned the apartment fight.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, the close quarters action is good.
When Brandon Lee's in Chicago.
Yeah, they get to Chicago and Frank Stewart is like, he's like, yeah, I'll watch TV. I'll see you in 8 hours, stuff like that. And that's where, like, it's the trailer moment. He's like, so who else is testifying?
Because
he's kind of being a brat.
Yeah.
He's
a wise ass.
He's like, I'm thirsty. Can I get some water?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, what are you doing? Because he's like, Pop-Tarts, more Pop-Tarts. What are you doing, Jake? I'm hungry, kind of thing. He's like, so who else is testifying? They're like, no one, not including you, Jake. And that's when they put the silencers on their guns. Yeah. And if you've seen, like they used to, was it MGM? Like when they, on VHSs, when they used to do like a preview of all the movies and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Every studio does something like that.
But I mean, you would probably know this. He runs across the kitchen and like swings the door of the freezer open, hit the guy in the face. Mm-hmm. And Brandon Lee is just, he's so good.
That's the thing with him using his surroundings.
Yeah. I will say there are a couple terrible shots in this movie, including in this scene.
Are you talking about where he's behind the wall?
He's hiding in a closet. And it's Brandon Lee jumps in the closet. He's hiding in the closet. The cop is shooting at him. You see the bullet holes coming through. And then it cuts to the cop, and it cuts back, and it's a still image of what we just saw, but with it's edited more bullet holes coming through with like gunshot noises. And I was like, I wonder if it's just the HD that makes that more noticeable.
Oh, absolutely.
But I was like, that's so bad.
Well, I thought
this is literally. I'm like, did my movie freeze?
You think the movie freezes for just a second or two? Because they did a freeze frame of him, like from the previous shot, him hiding in the closet, and they just edited in more light coming through the door as if more bullet holes were going
in. And I don't want to build this stuff up too much because it's easy for someone to, like, I could build it up and stuff. With the fight scenes, we're pretty much just going to say they're awesome.
Yeah,
it's tough without visuals to, like, really show you some
sweet. I think this movie, I'd said, is the epitome of something you call awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe not like an act of God or something of nature that's truly, like, awe-inspiring awesome, but with all the elements of what you're looking for in a late 80s, early 90s action movie, or just with all these different elements put together, it's just an awesome movie.
Yeah. And it's a testament to, I noticed this from the first time I watched it. Brandon Lee, just the nonverbals. He is getting shot at, and he's trying to escape. And he, out of desperation, he grabs a meat fork. Cop trying to kill him comes through, stabs him in the stomach, kills the cop. And there's this look of this distraught look on his face. I just killed somebody.
Which
is funny because, like, he probably killed a bunch of people.
That's where the inconsistency comes in for me, because that they do that a couple times.
I think they wanted to make him a pacifist.
I think if you go on Amazon and you get this off Prime, I think in their description
they call him a pacifist. And I was like, he never calls himself that, though.
First, like, 10 minutes of the movie, when he starts shooting people, I was like, he's not a pacifist.
Yeah. So it might be things filmed out of order.
Right. Of course, because movies are filmed out of order.
Of course.
Yeah, Mark Hamill.
But... And there's another scene to where there's a couple more scenes to where on his face he's like, ugh, I can't believe I just did that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also there's plenty of scenes where he's doing it without it phasing him.
Mm-hmm.
So, he's out of the apartment. We see, you mentioned before, that Withers is like going to check on him.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, because they get word and she's like, yeah, it's this kid from L.A.
Yeah.
They're bringing him to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
The feds got him. And you see her trying to go find him, and he jumps down. He's, like, shirtless and has blood on him. So she's like, freeze. And he's like, no, like, I'm innocent or whatever. And so there's this misunderstanding, and then he's running from the feds that are trying to kill him.
A couple little subtle things that
kind
of put the movie over for me a little more. Battle damage on people is really grotesquely, like, one of the feds, and then later Serrano, they get their noses broken, and it looks really gnarly.
Yep.
Not on everything, you know, because, you know, and as you'll probably go through if you're going in sequence here, when they get to Stewart's house, when they figure out, you know, what his role in the whole Serrano thing and Jake thing, Jake throws him into this glass shelving unit, and he's barely a scratch, but then, like, again, but it's battle damage is actually really good in here. And then also Brandon Lee has badass, like, screaming, like, action screaming.
Yeah. And some of the fights he does, like some of the noises he makes, some of the, like, his facial expressions are very reminiscent of his dad.
And then when he's,
which, like, if you catch it a couple times, you're like, that's really cool.
Yeah, there was one shot where I was like, that's a Bruce Lee look.
Yeah, but you cut to, because, like, Jake calls Frank, and he's like, oh, hey, Frank, you know, like, screw, I figured it out, like, you double-crossed me or whatever, and, like, they cut to Mace, Ryan, and the guy who played Shredder sitting in a surveillance vehicle listening to the conversation. Or no, not yet, because they're listening. They tapped his phone, like you said. They're listening to the conversation Frank's having with Serrano to be like, the kid got away or whatever. Yeah. And
that was another one of the little muddy things.
Yeah, I was like,
do they suspect
how did they tap
Stewart?
Yeah, I was like, why did they tap his phone specifically? Mm-hmm. There's nothing to give us that they know who he is.
I just think Jake's delivery made it sound like that, but I think it was just a whole delivery thing. Stewart tells Jake to meet him someplace, and then he turns around and calls Serrano. He's like, kid got away, but I told him to meet here.
Yeah, which is how Mace Ryan, Powers Booth, finds out where Jake's going to be, and he's like, I need this kid. Like, and use this kid essentially as a pawn to get Tao, the drug runner.
Yeah.
And
drug lord.
Serrano's a drug runner.
Yeah.
Or
Tao and Serrano are the drug lords, and then they have, you know, someone like Chang was a runner, and he has people all around who do their bidding.
So then, you know, Jake goes to meet Frank, but then Powers Booth pulls up, and he's like, who are you? And that's how Powers Booth knows where to find him, grabs him, takes him back to their headquarters, gives him a rundown. He's like, here's what I need from you. And Jake's like, I was just called here to identify Serrano.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you can't go back out there because now every cop in the city of Chicago is looking for you, the cop killer. On top of that, Serrano's still looking for you. So you really have no other choice but then to participate.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that's where we get, it's like this interweaving of, you know, he sends him in for a sting operation because... they go to Frank's house.
Frank Stewart, Raymond Barry, the FBI agent.
He's like, you know, I've got this. I got you on tape. basically in the pocket of Serrano.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to use you as well as a pawn. We're going to set up a meeting with Serrano. You're going to take Jake in there, essentially saying, like, I got him. Here he is. Mm-hmm. And then what you're going to do is you're going to go in and talk to Serrano about where those drugs are coming out of and when, because I want a location on that drop point and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then once you say, pleasure doing business with you, we will send in tear gas. Jake, you get the hell out of there. You know, basically, and it doesn't end up that way.
No, and it doesn't. What I will say, so you had mentioned how Mace Ryan is talking to Frank Stewart that he has a tape. He sent Jake out of the room before he told him he has a tape of him.
Because Jake would have been like, why don't you just give that to the feds?
Because it plays into it after the results of the sting operation. So I will say, at this point, it's about 45 minutes into the movie when the sting operation happens. And up to this point, I already like Jake. I already like Mace Ryan. I like Carla. Like, you like these characters, and even, you know, some of the smaller bit people like Shredder. Like, you know, you
we
like
keep calling him Shredder. Yeah. His character has an actual name.
Yeah,
which I will say, him and Jake briefly speak Chinese back and forth. I thought it was really cool to hear, because Brandon Lee speaks Chinese several times because he's, you know, he's part Chinese. He knows Chinese. It was just cool to see him speaking Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just a cool little detail.
Oh, yeah. But you come to like the crew behind Powers Booth, and you like Jake.
Yeah.
So you think in movies like this, it's really tense. Like whenever they're going, I was really, really like,
is Mace Ryan?
Yeah, I was like, who's gonna double? If someone's gonna double cross somebody,
Carla Withers the only one who's clean?
Is someone gonna die?
Yeah,
like up to that point, I feel like they established that Powers Booth wasn't going to, but in Sudden Death, I didn't think the one guy was gonna double cross Jean-Claude Van Damme, and he did.
That's true.
Yeah, but anyway, I was really, really nervous during the build-up. That you could feel the atmosphere was like tense.
Yeah.
And when they're giving him the rundown, I kind of almost like put myself in that situation.
Yeah.
Like Powers Booth is telling him, like, this is what you got to do. You know,
because again, he's just a civilian. He's just a college art student.
Yeah.
Up to this point, obviously he's been kicking ass.
Yeah.
And like I said, it is very reminiscent in a movie like this of someone who has some sort of special forces training or is like a hard-nosed police officer.
Carla Withers. Sorry, that's Carla Withers. Carl Withers. Sorry. Every time I was like, rest in peace, Carla Withers. I love you, Apollo Creed. Sorry, keep going.
No, it's that actor from Rocky, Carla Withers. What was I saying? Oh. Because he's so commanding in this movie, it's one of those reminders to, like, oh, he's just a kid.
In the world of the movie, he's still in a dangerous, he's someone who's not.
He's not someone who's used to this stuff.
He's not trained to be
an undercover police officer.
He's still a civilian in the world of the movie, even though we've seen him kick ass.
Yeah.
But it just leads to, like, what happens is Serrano is like, you know, before we get to the business before pleasure, I still want a little bit of pleasure. So he has Jake held onto by Tony Longo's character, and he starts like backhanding him. And, and one of the things that made me laugh, and it's kind of an insight into the dynamic between Powers Booth and Jake Lowe, is it's almost like the police, sir, may have another type attitude.
Yeah, Serrano's like, I'm going to break every finger one by one. I'm going to break every rib by rib. And he's like, he says, like, eat shit or something like that. And Powers Booth is like, Jesus, kid.
Yeah,
because he's wearing a wire.
Yeah, he shakes his head because he's like, you're going to get, you're,
or
you're.
He's not wearing a wire.
Jake isn't, but
Frank is wearing a wire.
Frank is wearing a wire.
Which leads to when Frank is supposed to, when they're supposed to go in, when he says pleasure doing business with you,
yeah,
Serrano gives him a hug and the mic cuts out.
Yeah.
So they don't hear him saying pleasure doing business with you. So he's like saying
pouring and sweat.
Pleasure doing business with you.
He's like, and pleasure doing business with you too, Frank. Hey, you know what that says to me when someone it doesn't do something for money? They want something else out of it. And he has like an Uzi and like mows down Frank.
Yeah.
And so that plan, like and then the
that's
plan,
where Jake just has to take it upon himself to get the hell out of
and
there.
And it's one of again, you can't go wrong with fight choreography with any of these, but it has to be one of the best one-man army, quote-unquote, fight
choreography. Probably my favorite fight scene in the whole movie.
It's one of the best I've ever seen.
Plus just down to his fighting stance and his swagger when he does it. And some guy, pins him by the neck with a shotgun. He does a backflip, grabbing the shotgun, shoots the guy who was shooting him, throws the shotgun, and then does a whoo, and then gets ready for the next three guys.
Yeah. And essentially, he has Serrano, everybody's dead. Every one of Serrano's guys that was in there was dead. Of course, there's police casualties in the firefight. There was a firefight that ensued once everything went to shit.
And this is the scene to where a couple times I was like, that's a Bruce Lee face, which is just really cool.
Yeah, and Jake comes carrying Serrano. He has Serrano by his collar, and he's broken his nose, and he throws him on the ground.
And if your power's Bruce, you're like, Jesus Christ, this kid's something else.
But one of the biggest things
is he's not any art student I know.
Yeah, essentially he's Powers Booth plays the tape for Jake that they had of Frank Stewart saying the FBI was in the pocket.
You could have given that to the FBI the whole time.
He's like, I needed you for this kid. And essentially finding out he was a pawn and he could have gotten killed being a pawn of the Chicago police force.
It's like I needed to know Tua or not Tua. I needed to know Tao's locations and stuff. Mm-hmm.
So he used him.
So I used you as a pawn.
Yeah, he's essentially like saying sorry kid, but means to an end with it. And Jake punches him in the face and he walks off and Carla goes after him because they were going to send him back to LA. And then that's when Carla's the next flight to Chicago's in 4 hours.
I think I've had enough police protection.
Yeah, which is a trailer moment.
Na 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 na.
Man, what a cool song. The band Hardline. They had John
Cain
and Neil Sean.
Song.
Yeah, exactly. The song that they have sex to.
Yeah.
Just too original. The score is really cool.
Yeah.
To very cool early 90s action movie score. A lot of saxophones and
saxophones.
Stuff. Yes, exactly.
But yeah, that's when Carla takes him back to his place and is like, I got his
her place.
Yeah. She's like, I pulled a few strings. I got his file. Yeah. And that's when he's like, he doesn't want to believe that what he's seeing is what he sees. Like, there's something missing, which there is. On one of the lobby cards for this movie is a scene. It's a still shot of a scene with Jake in a military office fighting a bunch of military guys.
Oh, yes,
which is supposed to be, it was a scene to where he was looking for his dad's file.
I think I read about that.
So there's a lobby, is not in the movie, but there's a lobby card of that scene.
Yeah. And then they're back at Carla's. And one of the things that they actually do, and it's one of the things that I applaud in movies and TV when they use juxtaposition. There's the love, the quote unquote, the hard line, that band that did the song Matt was just singing it, that ends up in the trailer and in the end of the movie, which is used great. It's the love, the song they're having sex to.
Yeah.
But what's happening is they're alternating between Withers and Jake making love, and alternating between that. And then Serrano in prison with also with Mace and his force going to Tommy Tao's
laundry warehouse facility.
Yeah. Because that's where they think the drugs are. Mm-hmm. And it is, but they're looking in all the wrong places.
Yeah.
And the whole time you see in the background Tao's just kind of watching them do that. And
Serrano's getting killed in jail.
He's getting
by
killed
Tao's
in jail.
People.
All the while this love theme is playing. It's that juxtaposition that kind of puts me on
romantic
edge. Yeah,
kind
it
of
puts
song.
Me on edge because you're like, oh no, characters I like are gonna die.
Yeah.
And again, they're using that juxtaposition of they're doing this to kind of put you off guard, because usually songs like this are used.
Yeah.
You know, Goodfellas.
Exactly.
The piano part of Layla, where they go through and they see everybody that's been killed who talked about the Lufthansa heist.
Yeah. And then once that montage is over, it's cut to Jake and Carla in bed, and then Mace goes to...
Mace doesn't die. I was afraid Mace was going to die.
And he goes there, and he's like, 10 years wasted. Like, I could do was that smug bastard sitting there while we were running around like chickens with our heads cut off trying to find where all this... he's like, I know it's there. I can smell it. He's just like, he's trying to figure out, it's like, how are we, I'm going to be back on the street tomorrow. Like, how are we going to do this? Is there, I've only had a guy on the inside, you know, what about this guy? What about this, you know? And he's like, man, I miss that kid. Yeah. Because Jake was his.
He thought Jake was gone.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Jake's on the other side of the wall.
Yeah.
But it does lead to a scene that I liked, kind of cheesy, but it cuts back to the bowling alley.
Yeah.
And kind of a running joke is that there's one pin that Mace just can't knock down. Mm-hmm. And finally, he's like, and he just takes out his gun and shoots.
Because they're packing up. Because he's gonna be back, you know, hoofing it on the street as an officer, and he's gonna be out
This drug war I've been fighting. Like, I lost.
Yeah, and that the scene in Withers' apartment when she's like, when they're talking about like all that stuff, and he's that's where he says, I like that kid, and he's like, well, see, she's like, we're gonna get Tao, and he's like, yeah, all right, and then he walks out, and then
they're at the bowling alley, you hear a door creak open, and you see
it's a cool part of the score comes on, like the triumphant part of the score,
and you see Jake and Carla just walking through, and he's like, well, son of a bitch, you know, like there, he's like, since I'm here to help, like, what can I do, kind of thing. And so that's who he uses to go undercover in disguise into the laundry factory, which I don't know if this was intentional, but the way Jake was dressed when he's undercover, like, he kind of had these doofy horn-rimmed or these doofy, like, thick-rimmed glasses or whatever, and he's gonna go in as kind of like a bumbling, he's speaking Chinese,
very meek, like,
kind of bumbling character. I wonder if that was an homage to Bruce Lee's character in Fists of Fury.
I absolutely
he goes undercover as like a doofy telephone repairman. Immediately what I thought. I've never seen that movie, but I've seen it still shots of that.
I'm almost positive it was. Not even if Brandon Lee didn't have a say in it or not, I'm sure they would have, because Powers Booth is like, all right, Fist of Fury, go to the other room or whatever earlier.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, haha. But with as many homages as he made to Hong Kong cinema, he's not going to have an homage to his father. Because up to that point, he had resigned. He had come to terms with the fact that for a while he was going to be in his dad's shadow.
Yeah.
So it's not one of those things where he would have an aversion to it. So I would almost be positive of that.
Meanwhile, so he goes in and he's going and he finds the source of like where they're hiding it.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, on the outside, Carla and Mace both get taken by Tao's guys and taken in there, and it's the typical, like, I'm about to kill two cops and stuff like that, and, you know, now they're swept up all in it, like, on the inside, and Jake has to save them, and he basically just throughout the laundry facility is beating guys up.
Awesome. See, him and Al Leong have such a badass fight, and there's a sequence to where he's jumping up.
Ryan gets shot.
Yeah, Ryan gets shot,
and he's like, what? He's like, go get him.
Yeah.
Like, go, and Jake tells Carl, like, stay with him. And then Ryan's like, you go do your damn job.
Yeah.
You leave me. Go do your damn job.
And, but when Jake's fighting Al Leong's character, who's the main henchman for Tao, he does this thing where he runs up on a fence. He's holding a fence.
Yeah.
He swings backwards and then down the fence. It's so cool.
You have to see it.
Like we do with a lot of these movies, I urge you to, like, If you like movies like this, I urge you to spend the $3 and change on renting it.
He just
watching.
He
it.
Glides.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Lee just glides. Mm-hmm. He's so smooth.
Mm-hmm. And then it eventually becomes. At this point, Tao is telling his guys to just burn the place down, and Tao goes into his office, and he's just going to take all the money that he had made. And he was going to just burn everything to the ground and start over.
Yep.
And so Jake runs after Tao, and they end up on
like a subway platform
on a train platform,
which
they kind of mimicking at the beginning when they're in China, when Tao is with Serrano.
Well, Tao's like, who are you? Like, what are you trying when?
Cause Tao doesn't know about Jake.
I was kind of waiting for I was kind of waiting for them to draw or to swing back around and have some sort of
connection between Tao and like Jake's Tiananmen dad.
Square.
Yeah, yeah, or something, which they had never even alluded to or whatever. But I was kind of waiting for that.
Yeah.
Something other than, oh, well, I've just taken up for the cause now, which makes more sense upon second viewing that he's not cynical anymore about taking a stand and doing the right thing.
Yeah.
He's adopted Mace Ryan's attitude about that. And that's really what it is.
Yeah.
But on the train tracks.
On the train tracks, there's a scene at the beginning in China with Tao and Serrano to where they're at this fight circle of sorts, and they're watching these two guys with these
large kind of like bow staffs.
Yeah, like fighting one another. And in that, Tao, like, to kind of assert his authority over Serrano, he gets in the fight pit or the fight circle with the two guys and takes them both out. And that's before he says the Sicilian proverb.
Yeah.
But in on the train tracks, he takes this metal rod with a hook on it, and him and Jake have a fight like that. And
it's established that the train tracks are electric. Electricity running through them because the train tracks.
Yeah. And then Jake is prone.
Tracks,
Jake is prone, and well, it's not a sub. It's a they're above ground. Like it's just the L train.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the train it starts coming through, and Jake is prone, and the train's coming up.
That's
and
another
there's
terrible.
Another yeah.
Very
it's a sped up.
Yeah, Tao has Jake pinned down on the train track, and while the train is coming through, the footage is clearly sped up like in a silent movie.
Yeah.
Which I wonder what the production decision was on that.
It's probably to illustrate, because of course you can't have an actual train going full speed.
Right, right, right.
But it's probably just to illustrate how fast the train is coming.
Yeah.
But essentially, Tao is
it doesn't look good.
Yeah, it's like Tao's both the metal rods land on the electrical parts. He's electrocuted and then hit by the train.
Yeah.
And Jake rolls his way on a part of the track that's not prone to the train coming, and then gets back on the platform. And then, but that's not all. So Tao is taken out, but then he goes back and the factory's on fire. And like Carla gets out, and he sees that, like, she's like, Ryan's still in there. And then he goes in and it's slowed down. He's like, Ryan!
And that's where he kind of, that's the redemption.
Yeah. And he's having the flashbacks to like his dad telling him to run.
Yeah.
And then he sees Ryan and he picks him up. And that's kind of his redemption.
Yeah.
What he couldn't do for his father, he'll do for this guy who's kind of illustrated to him like what it means to follow like a higher purpose. And even if, you know, sure, there was some, you know, casualties, quote unquote, of like, you know, he Ryan had a family, and in his pursuit for what he thought was right, because that's the big thing too, is Withers was like, your dad was doing what he thought was right, and that's essentially what they're trying to portray with Withers and with Mace Ryan.
And didn't Jake say at some point it's like something about like it's always other people or something? Like she tries to reason with him, like, this stuff happens, and he's like, this stuff happens, it's always other people,
always
or something like that.
It's always the innocent people who essentially are, who suffer from what people, when people are trying to do what's right.
Right.
So he brings Ryan out, and, you know, they put him on a gurney, and Ryan, we're led to believe he lives.
He's alive by the end of the movie.
Yeah, Carla and Jake are rolling with him, and, says something about like being tough, and he's like, had a good teacher or something like that.
I remember it was the line I just referred to where he's like other people are involved.
Yeah.
At one point Carla's like, yes, he's doing whatever it takes. He's like, whatever it takes. What did he say?
Whatever it takes happens to other people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So essentially there are innocent people caught in the crossfire of those who just go by whatever it takes.
Yeah.
There's a exchange between, of course, you know, you can't go without an exchange between Ryan and Jake.
Yeah.
But then he's like, you're just using me to get to him. And Carl's like, of course.
Yeah.
And, or no, what Ryan was like, you're just
he's like, kid, she's just using you to get to me.
Like, hi. And he's like,
kind of joking around.
You're using me to get to him. She's like, of course. And the paramedic's like, hey, are you guys in or out? And Jake, they look at each other and he's like, we're in. And they both get in, and so starts. So starts that song, and I am a sucker for a great song and scene usage together, and it just makes me. It puts the movie over for me even more. And one of my favorite little subtle things, whether they meant to or not, when it gets to that, Carla and Jake look up at the same time in like relief, like not at each other, but they just look up at the same time as if like the.
Yeah.
Or like just letting things settle in.
Yeah.
And then the ambulance drives off, and then the shot comes up, and as the credits roll, we see the Chicago skyline.
Yep.
Of downtown Chicago. Rapid fire.
That's rapid freaking fire.
Rapid freaking fire. Again, like Matt had mentioned earlier, with any movie we do, ones that we love, it just are how emphatic we are over them just comes out. But we don't want to build anything up and then people be like, oh, it wasn't as great as they said. But this movie, honestly, it's
awesome.
It's so awesome. Yep. And I think even at the beginning of the episode, I said my biggest fear was I was going to get really sad at the end of it. You know, it was awesome. Pump my fist in the air. Oh, that's great. But then getting really sad again with the realization that Brandon Lee is gone.
We'll never get to see this again.
Yeah. Maybe not the same way that just the end of The Crow really puts me in a down mood.
Yeah.
But his performance, and again, thankfully, it wasn't just him carrying it. The supporting cast was awesome. But just his performance in the what ifs, the what could have been, it just really bummed me out.
I know.
So at the end of the day, when all that like wears off, when the residuals of that, you know, go away, it just leaves me just really loving this movie. Yeah.
Yep.
Like it was so cool.
Yep. I really, really liked it.
Mm-hmm. And we would suggest if you are a fan, again, if you are a fan of these movies, we highly, highly recommend this one. Yep. Go check it out. But week three of Martial Arts Month is in the books.
Yep.
Again, next week, week four, we're going to be doing a Sucktastic Cinema re-release. So it's giving you a chance to know ahead of time whether or not to skip that episode or not.
Yes.
We apologize that we won't have a new release. But thank you all nonetheless for listening in, not just this week, but every week. Episode 160. I just remembered. Yes, episode 160. Episode. So just like we were bad at saying when 150 was, we're bad at saying when 160 was. But you all are such great sports about it.
Yep.
Thank you all for not crucifying us for those oversights. And thank you all for listening.
Yes.
And until the next time.
Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other. Because why would you want to be rude when you could be rad? We'll see you next time.
This concludes our broadcast day.